call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. What is today? Today is Wednesday the 24th, and it's 1:32 right now. So today we have Senator Matricki with us, Senator Keel, Senator, what's her name? Shelley Hughes, Senator Reinbold. It's getting old. And today we have a quorum to do business with us. Sean Ayer is my committee aide. Nancy Hemingway is going to be recording this for us, and Brett Collins is going to be making sure the LIOs get to hear and listen in on this. We only have one item on today's agenda, ladies and gentlemen. We have the Senate Bill 55. It got sent back to us for some modification, and I think probably the first thing we can do, Senator Matricki, is if you wouldn't mind making a motion to adopt the yes version of the CS for Senate Bill 55, and then we'll go from there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the committee adopt the CS for Senate Bill 55 work draft 31-LS0485/Sierra as our working document.
And I'm going to object. I think it's pretty straightforward. Normally, a staff would do this, but I think if we can have Senator Wilson come forward and talk to us, this is an amendment that I've talked with the senator about, and it's pretty straightforward. So if you wouldn't mind, Senator, just go ahead and explain this particular approach to this bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a pretty simple explanation of changes in the sectional from version U to version S. Senate Bill 55, version S, section 1, adds a permanent fourth judge of a court of appeals position. This position will be filled by the normal process as described in AS 2707. And section 2 just changes the effective date. In version U, the previous bill was a two-year appointment to the fourth court of appeals. But as talking with the courts, the administration, and other lawmakers, we felt this was a more appropriate matter to do, especially after the Chief Justice mentioned about the number of new cases coming down the pike, and the Department of Law did analysis about how many cases that they also see, and they confirmed and conferred with the Chief Justice analysis that a permanent judge may be the best approach. It will still be a three-panel judge, but they allow that fourth judge to continue to write opinions and catch up on work and still have an alternate, especially when they have cases they may conflict out due to their prior service maybe a Superior Court judge or something else. They may have to have a conflict, vacation, sick days, and so this will just help the courts continue on with that backlog.
So is there questions at this point?
Is this the right time to make a comment or no?
Make a comment, especially if you're addressing the sponsor of the bill. Yes?
Okay, so just through the chair, just a comment. Going from temporary to permanent, of course, is a red flag for me. And then this is allowing not only four judges, but it's also four total staff. So we're growing government in a time of fiscal crisis. So I'm just saying that the other bill I actually like better than this, because at some point all these people that claim that they have all this work, like let's say at Health and Social Services, they catch up, then we still have all their employees. At DNR, they add all these employees to catch up, they catch up, and then we still have all these employees. So, I mean, this is a small example. This is a very important case, but it just seems like it's a pretty regular thing I see down here. It's just everyone says yes to growth of government, and nobody seems to be able to say, you know, shrinking government. It's just something I want to get on the record. It's frustrating to see, especially in a time of fiscal crisis, even though I understand the Court of Appeals is important and all that. I get it, but it's just a pattern I see down there that's very frustrating.
Point well taken. Point well taken. I think we actually warned ourselves about this when we decided to up the penalties under Senate Bill 49. And we knew that these were going to be some of the costs coming our way. Yes, Senator Hughes.
Thank you. Right now, without this fourth judge, there are delays. Do you happen to know particularly for crime victims, when matters are settled and addressed in a timely manner, it's much better for the victims. Do we know how it might shorten up the delays going forward.
And Mr. Chair, also here as a lifeline is Ms. Nancy Mead.
Yes.
Was I was hoping to call to talk about the, I think some of the note, the concerns that Senator Reinbold has addressed in the note and the basically doubling of the cost of this bill for going forth, and I think she could probably be a better respondent to Senator Hughes's question upon the time frames of the court system.
All right, we can ask Nancy to come up in a minute. Before we let you go, though, is there any other questions to the senator, Senator Reinbold?
Okay, so in regards to House Bill 49, this is, to me, I was referring to HESS, I was referring to DNR, I'm referring to courts, wherever it happens to be. This is a blanket statement. But when we passed House Bill 49, it was the same thing 3 years before. I mean, if it's just like taking us back 3 years when we repealed SB 91, basically. I mean, I know there's you know, let's say 90% of SB 91 repealed. They were still in the situation before, and the cost to the public is unprecedented. I mean, we were losing lives, we were losing stores, we were. I know, in, even in Eagle River, we were only allowed to go in one door and out one door after 8 p.m. at Fred Meyer, in one of the most quiet communities in the state. I mean, the cost to the public was unimaginable, and so that's why I did support the repeal, because public safety is our most important mandate, and it was our state was falling apart. So I understand, but it to me, there's still the justification was it was pre-SB 91 3 years ago. They didn't need a judge then. Why do they need a judge now?
Well, we do have a fiscal note, and we'll ask Nancy Mead to come on up. The public testimony, I guess, on this bill had been noticed, and so. But at this point, since it's requested, we can bring Nancy Mead up. And there is a fiscal note that is an updated fiscal note within your packet here that shows about $586,300. Nancy, why don't you come on forward? And maybe the question first, and yes, you can be excused, Senator. Nancy, put yourself on the record, and do you want Senator Hughes to restate the question, or do you think you can go from where she left off?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Nancy Mead, General Counsel for the Alaska Court System, and I do not need the question repeated. I think the question went to how much quicker criminal cases could be finally resolved with a fourth judge as opposed to the current panel of three judges. And I can't say exactly how much quicker, of course, but right now it's taking about 3 years from the time of filing an appeal in the Court of Appeals till the time of disposition. That's the average. That's not really acceptable to the public, to victims, to the court system. And a lot of that is attributable to factors outside the court's control. For example, the cases aren't ready. Aren't fully prepared by the attorneys. But still, we want to address the piece that is within the court's control. I can't say or estimate how much faster it would be, but if half the delay is the court's problem, we would hope to cut that by at least a quarter or something along those lines, because now each of the four judges will deal with 75% of the cases filed instead of three judges dealing with 100% of the cases filed. So we do expect there to be a speeding up of the court's part of that process.
Senator Hughes?
And can you look back 3 years back, as Senator Reinbold referred to, what was the delay? So is the delay picked up, or what was the delay before SB 91 was on the books?
Through the chair to Senator Hughes, the delays have been growing steadily since about 2011, and that was before SB 91 or all of the other law changes in that time period. And that is due to a number of factors. It's hard to pin it down exactly, but in 2011, the average number of opinions one of the three judges had to issue a year was about 50. And in 2018, it's about 90 if they want to keep pace. Part of that is because more resources for law enforcement, higher case filings, just more difficult decisions needing to be made based on all the legal changes. And during that time period, there was a new judge appointed. Well, there were several new judges appointed. The most recent, earliest of the three judges on there was appointed in 2012. So we had a new judge in 2012, a new one in 2013, then a new one, I think, in 2018 or 19. And when that happens, the new judges who come up, particularly for this court, are often conflicted out of handling some of the caseload because generally they come from the criminal arena. For example, if they come from the public defenders, depending on their level within that agency, they would not be able to preside over certain cases because of conflicts. One of the judges appointed had come from the head of the Department of Law's appellate division for criminal cases, and that individual was conflicted out and couldn't serve as effectively as a different judge could. So we kind of got in a hole in those early teen years, and it has grown and grown based on the filings and law changes since then.
Senator Rainbow.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Nancy, for being here today. So you said that it, I have a couple questions, and I know you're really smart, so I can ask them, I believe, together. But the Court of Appeals, it says 3 years. Can you explain why in the world? I mean, that does not seem like it's constitutional for a speedy trial. I'm just, you just call me naive, I don't care. But the bottom line is it doesn't seem to be a speedy trial, especially if it's a Court of Appeals, the decision's already made. One, I need to know the why 3 years, and is it because of the public defenders asking for a delay? I don't know. You know, I don't exactly know how a Court of Appeals, I've never been to one of those before. And you said, it was an interesting comment, I thought. You said the Court of Appeals often comes from the public defender, so they conflict out. Why? Why do they come from the public defender? Why don't they come from the prosecution side, and I, because if we're empowering more public defense, I'm not sure if I support this bill. I mean, I just, at this point, I'm becoming more doubtful.
Through the chair to Senator Rainbold, I can address all three of those areas. Why 3 years, though, is a difficult thing to pin down. I mean, the base reason is everybody in the system has too much work to do, and that includes the lawyers who are preparing the briefs in these cases. And those are both coming from the Department of Law, the prosecution, as well as the defense, which is most often the public defender. So they both need more time to get everything ready for the court. The speedy trial rule applies to a trial, to the Superior Court and to the district court trials, but there is not a speedy resolution rule for the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court. As I say, 3 years is not satisfactory to anybody in the system, including the judges. They surely would like to get those cases over with sooner than that so that everybody could benefit. But given their caseload, unfortunately, they are not able to do the deep analysis and consideration of each case any faster. Secondly, who is asking for a delay? Is it the public defender? Again, that's kind of tied to the prior answer. The public defender is not able to brief the cases faster, but the Department of Law is also not able to brief the cases faster. I don't have it broken down who is asking for additional time. Often it's a stipulation between the two parties, and so we don't even know, but they need time to brief their cases fully. And yes, it's just a review of a decision that was already made, and so, but the decisions at the appellate level are much more legally intense and take a lot more analysis than some of the decisions that are made at the trial level. So I don't know who to pin it on, but that it's an entire criminal justice issue. Third, if I said that most judges come from the public defender, I didn't. On this court, I didn't mean to imply that. It's just that those who apply to be an appellate judge at the Court of Appeals level are interested in and often have a history in criminal law because that's all this court does. And so they can come either from the public defender or from the Department of Law's criminal division or really from anywhere else. But generally, those interested and who apply and who have appropriate experience and background come from one of those two agencies. And it's not like one is more represented than the other. So if I said that, I'm sorry about that.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Mead, maybe some caseload math I'm doing, and I don't know if it's as simple in reality as it is in my head, so please correct me where I get this mm-hmm. wrong. But I think you said before we were started amassing a backlog, each judge on the Court of Appeals was having to write about 50 opinions a year. So 150 opinions a year coming out of the court, and now that's at 90, so 270 opinions a year coming out of the court. If the math is really that straight line, a fourth judge gets them not back down to 50 a year, but back down to about 67, 68 a year. So if I have this right, is 67, 68 a manageable caseload, or does it need to be 50?
Through the chair to Senator Keel, the court system has also included in its budget request funding for an additional staff attorney for the Court of Appeals. And we have cobbled together funding for a staff attorney who is serving right now on the Court of Appeals, as well as some pro tem assistance so that they could start to try to get out of this hole. And by the way, though, this is an aside through the chair, we've asked for other funding in our budget, but if this bill passes, we will drop the request for that other funding. But we will maintain the request for the staff attorney. A staff attorney can be very helpful. Especially at this level of court in handling things, for example, like the more routine petitions for review or preparing cases for the judge's consideration in a more comprehensive manner. So the court does think with one additional judge, it will create a caseload that is more manageable. I mean, that is manageable.
And just to follow up on that.
Please do, Senator Keel.
Manageable to keep up or catch up?
Through the chair to Senator Keel, well, both. At the beginning, we will the Court of Appeals will be struggling still. Those three judges work very routinely at least 6 full days a week, oftentimes 7. They're not taking their vacation time that they're allotted because when you go away and come back, the cases don't stop and the piles are still there. The work doesn't stop. With a fourth judge, we hope that in those first year, 2, 3, the backlog will be dealt with, and then the judges who sit on that court will have a more manageable workload and life.
I did want to get to the fiscal note here in a minute, but Senator Reinbold.
Okay, so one question I have is if it's going from 3 to 4, and I'm sorry if I missed this, okay, because it's been a while since we heard this bill. Couldn't that be like a 2 and 2, or do one of them step down during the decision? Because I thought we had odd numbers, so there wasn't split decision. So that's question number one.
Through the chair to Senator Reinbold, that's a great question, actually. The way they would handle this is the same as many other intermediate appellate courts in the country have 4 or 6 judges, and what they do and what the Court of Appeals will do is serve on 3-judge panels so that in for the January cases, judges A, B, C will sit on it. And for the February ones, judges B, C, D, and then C, D, A. So each judge, every panel will be the odd number of 3, just as it is now. But that means the each of the 4 judges will only be sitting and assigned to work on 75% of the cases and will have, therefore, more time to dedicate to those cases.
Second question. Okay, so the second question is, and I apologize, I wish I knew this. I haven't had the court's budget for a little bit, but so where do the 3 Court of Appeals reside and where are they from? And also if you could mention who they are and if they have a public defense or prosecution background, if you happen to know that off the top of your head right now.
Through the chair to Senator Reinbold, the 3 judges on the Court of Appeals are Judge Allard, Judge Wallenberg, and Judge Harbison. Judge Harbison sits in Fairbanks, and Judges Allard and Wallenberg live and sit in Anchorage. They conduct much of their business by video conference because of that. It just happens that somebody from outside of Anchorage was appointed Judge Harbison in 2019. Judge Harbison has a background as a Superior Court judge, and I believe before that a District Court judge, but I may be incorrect. She's been a judge for a very long time in Fairbanks, and I don't know where she was, I'm sorry to say, before she became a judge, but it has been a long time. Judge Wallenberg was appointed in 2017, and she did come from the Public Defender Agency. And Judge Allard was appointed by Governor Parnell in 2012, and she came actually from being a staff attorney at the Court of Appeals before she was appointed.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Majicki.
So I was in support of the original bill. I'm struggling a little bit. So originally we were going to do a sort of temporary judge. Is that correct? One judge with no staff. And now we're adding 300,000 plus for three additional positions in addition to the judge themselves. Did the department think about, and I don't know who brought, I know who brought the bill forward. I don't know who's sort of supporting the bill and how it got to this place with the four slots, but did you consider sort of giving it a go with a staffer these are tough times, and you will be adding a significant amount of relief to the judges themselves. I think the struggle I have is with the additional staff, or at least three additional staff.
Go ahead.
Through the chair to Senator Majicki. Each judge now in the Court of Appeals has two law clerks and one judicial assistant. So adding a new judge that could be as effective as he or she should be means that they would require the same resources as the other judges on the Court of Appeals. If it helps with the fiscal note, I will say that with the two-year temporary judge, our fiscal note was going to be about $275,000. And as I mentioned earlier, we do have in our budget request, and it has been funded by the subcommittee in the other body, an additional request for resources for the Court of Appeals, because that was not going to be enough, frankly. And so that is another $233,000 that's in our budget right now that, again, we would remove from our budget. So this bill really represents only an increase of about $60,000 above those two amounts that we hope would have been funded. So even though it does look big, it will allow that judge to operate at the same level as every other appellate judge without being handicapped by not having a law clerk, for example, to do the legal research. So that's why we included the extra positions.
Follow up.
Yeah, Senator Majicki.
The increase is actually the same, whether or not it enters into the budget or through this bill. And if it wasn't supported in this bill and wasn't supported in the budget, you wouldn't have the increase. So it's not really a difference. It just depends on how it gets inserted, if it's supported by the legislature and not vetoed and all of those things that come along with it, right? I hear what you're saying. I wish things are tight.
Through the chair to Senator Majicki, I just wanted, if it's with the chair's permission, I'd just like to put forward a couple of other circumstances that have led us to think that a longer-term permanent judge will be required. And first of all, at the trial court level, we've seen, as the Chief Justice mentioned, a record high number of felony cases filed. And I mean by 1,000 more than ever before last year, and then in FY19, several hundred more than that. So cases, the more filings you have at the trial level, the larger the pool of potential cases that could come to the Court of Appeals. So we don't see this decreasing. Similarly, our trial rate went up last year for felonies, and the larger number of trials, that truly indicates the larger number of cases that can be appealed, because a lot of cases filed could be dismissed or certainly plea bargained, and almost never could a plea bargained case come up on appeal. So the trial rate that grew is leading to a larger pool of cases for the Court of Appeals. The prosecutors and the district attorney received more positions in the last couple of years. That means filings we expect to go up. There's more law enforcement. We expect that to lead to more filings. And if you look at just the number of currently pending Superior Court felony cases, if you take a snapshot of the last several years, how many are pending at one day from July 1st, 2016 to July 1st, 2020, there was a 42% increase in that number of cases. So those are some of the facts that have led us to think there will be even the caseload of the Court of Appeals is going to continue to grow, as Mr. Chairman noted, with changes in laws. And it doesn't matter which way those changes go, you have more novel issues, more unsettled areas of law. And the transitions between different laws have led to questions about, at the appellate level, about which version of the law applies under certain circumstances. So those are some of the reasons that we see this problem is not going away.
One more, Senator Michiki.
Just to explain the impacts of a slower Court of Appeals outcome. So you have folks go through their trials and they're convicted. So folks that are not convicted are not going to be appealing anything, right? So you're talking about convicted individuals that are appealing their particular case. So again, outside of the speedy trial thing, but what are the impacts in there being a delay to the Court of Appeals?
Through the chair to Senator Michiki, the impact to the court is not something we look at so much as the impact on the public. If a case gets reversed by the Court of Appeals, for example, or remanded, sent back to the trial court for further proceedings, that's problematic for the prosecution. If they have to retry a case and witnesses in those intervening years have gone away or are become unavailable, it makes it much more difficult to retry the case at the trial level. Secondly, victims know when their perpetrator, convicted person at that point, has an appeal going on, and they don't achieve closure in that case until they know that it's over and done with. And that's the impetus for the court trying to act as quickly as possible. It's expensive, and it's unsatisfactory mostly to victims in the community.
Yes, Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Nancy, could you refresh my memory as far as the judiciary fiscal note for HB 49, if you were requesting additional resources to cover what you've just been talking about, the expected increased number of trials? And so that's number one. Number two is, what were the staffing levels back when the caseload was approximately 50 cases per each of the judges?
Through the chair to Senator Hughes, when the cases in 2011 were 50 per judge, there were three judges, two law clerks, and a JA per judge. So the same as it is today, with 90 per judge needing to be made. With respect to HB 49, I am actually blanking. I am almost certain we did not ask for any resources for the Court of Appeals, but I will check and get back to the committee on that point.
Senator Reinbold.
And thank you. This is actually pretty important stuff, even though it's like this big of a bill. This is complicated. So basically, what my question is, what kind of cases would the Court of Appeal, and I say I've tried to go to therapeutic course, I've tried to go to lots and lots of different court cases in different places, including federal court. But this is the Court of Appeals is something I've never been to. So I will say I'm asking for help here. But this is an example of a case that I'm really frustrated about, but an 8-year-old girl was strangled with her sweater by a 52-year-old man. It ended up being validated with a healthcare worker, and with it was validated that it happened. She had strangle marks on her neck, etc. a judge ended up giving 18 months with 18 months suspended to this 52-year-old man. I find that reprehensible. It troubles me because I see case after case after case where I'm like, these judges have lost their mind. They've lost any type of judgment. This is to anybody's, it's just unbelievable. So would a court of appeals be taking a case like that? And who would be filing it? The poor little 8-year-old doesn't have the resources to do that. So I'm trying to figure out what kind of cases go there to the court of appeals.
Through the chair to Senator Reinbold, I'm not familiar with the specific case you're speaking of. The cases that go to the Court of Appeals are all criminal matters. So there are mostly either merit appeals, I shouldn't have been found guilty and I was, that's common, or sentence appeals. I'll accept my guilt, but the amount of sentence that I received was excessive for some reason. So the defendants appeal those sorts of issues in the Court of Appeals. In addition, the Court of Appeals accepts other criminal type matters like juvenile delinquency, which is not criminal but is semi-criminal, appeals about bail, appeals about petitions to revoke probation, post-conviction relief. So all that's related to a criminal trial. I will say with respect to your question that the judges must, and in all cases, do sentence somebody within the parameters set by statute. And so, I'm not familiar with that case, but I'm not sure of the exact crime for which the person was convicted. But there are some things that people, that surprise people. For example, criminally negligent homicide is a different level of crime than manslaughter or murder. So if that were the conviction, the sentence would be lower than you might expect. And again, I'm also not sure if that was a trial or if that was a plea bargain. And if there's a plea bargain, the judge is very limited about changing the sentence that the parties agreed to.
Nancy, normally I don't have to say this. You need to move the mic just a little bit away from you.
Away,
yeah. Normally it's the other way around, but your P's and S's are distorting a little bit. So,
Mr. Chairman, could I follow up?
Senator Reinbold.
Thank you. Okay, so I just want to make sure I heard you clearly. Like I said, I hadn't been to a court of appeals yet. So let's say victim versus defender. Of the court of appeals, what percentage of these cases would be the defender, the person who's asking for, you know, they had too much sentence or they didn't like their whatever. What percentage? Is it the vast majority? Is it 90%? Is it 100%? I don't know.
Through the chair to Senator Reinbold, yes, it's the vast majority where the defendant is dissatisfied with what happened at the trial level. And I'll just modify one small thing in your question. And the victim is involved through the Department of Law, but it is always the Department of Law who enforces the criminal laws through the court system.
Yeah, the defendant generally would be the one appealing because they're usually the one under sentence. So, yes, Senator Reinbold.
Thank you. So the final comment is this is one more drawn-out re-victimization of the victim, and the more I listen to this bill, the more I don't like it. I mean, in all fairness, it's just I am just getting so tired of the defendant having more constitutional rights when the victim is dead, and if I said it wrong, I'm sorry, but the victim might be dead. Their constitutional rights are gone, and the defendant has right after right after right, appeal after appeal after appeal. So I don't know. I understand workloads and all that kind of stuff, but if it's one more thing empowering and emboldening the defender, I don't know. I'm stepping back.
Point well taken. Victims do struggle. There's no doubt that there's a process question on making sure victims are made whole because quite often there is actually no remedy. Quite often this is the case, I get that. But it's also true that we have a system of appeal where sometimes the courts or a jury may get it wrong where you get a chance to appeal your case. And so we have to balance. We have three constitutional duties here: protect the victims, protect the rights of the accused, and have a system that has due process. And so, Senator Hughes.
And I'm going to expose how naive I am about this, but is there no recourse for the victim if the victim feels like the sentence was too weak? Can a can a victim, do prosecutors ever appeal and say, we need a harsher sentence? Or is, it sounds like you said virtually it's all the defendant who's appealing.
Through the chair to Senator Hughes, because of the Constitution's double jeopardy clause, meaning that you can't try a person twice for the same conduct, that's why it ends up nearly always being the defendant who challenges, files an appeal. I will remind the committee that the vast majority of cases are resolved through a plea bargain. And the legislature amended statutes recently to say that the prosecutor is required to make reasonable efforts to be in contact with the victim and to notify the victim when there is a plea bargain and to consider the victim's view on plea bargains. So the victim does have a voice through that.
In the criminal justice system, satisfaction is very hard to get because you're dealing with really hard issues of criminal behavior. It's just a fact. And we have bad actors often. We do have to have a system, though, that is balanced in law. And this appellate system needs to be a place where if I was accused and I felt like I was wronged on the accusation and found guilty, I'd want to appeal. So, I mean, it's just the system that we have devised. Fortunately, we have a good system. Unfortunately, it's an overwork system right now. And so I'm going to be in support of this, and I appreciate the senator for bringing it forward. Nancy, is there any other comments you want to make on this particular bill? Any other questions? It's a pretty straightforward. We have a judge with three staff members, basically two clerks and a judicial officer or judicial helper, right? And question for the senator or for Ms. Mead?
Ms. Mead.
Senator Machicki.
So we have a lot of cases these days on that are coming back because of DNA stuff. If someone had been in prison for a long time and DNA evidence could potentially clear them from a crime from a long time ago, would it go through the Court of Appeals even if it were 10 or 15 or 20 years after the original case?
Through the chair to Senator Machicki, the time to appeal a trial court's decision is limited by rule. I don't know if it's 30 days or 60 days, but it's not years. But somebody does have a right to file what's called a motion for post-conviction relief. Those go to the trial court level. And if you have something that sort of needs to be retried, that would be filed in the trial court. At the end of that decision, somebody could appeal the decision on their post-conviction relief to the Court of Appeals, and they do have jurisdiction over those because they're related to an actual underlying felony or misdemeanor offense.
Thank you.
Yeah, and just to let you know on the DNA question, it's also true that right now, because of the DNA system, victims actually are getting some help from cold case file settings. And so those are all good things. So, well, I think that we've talked this one to the point of a decision. We do have public testimony open, and does anybody in the room want to testify at this point? There's nobody online to testify, so I'll close public testimony and ask for the will of the committee on this one. Senator Machicki?
Thank you.
Oh, go ahead.
Do you have discussion first, or do you want to make a motion first?
We'll make a motion, then you can. I'll object so you can hear.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 55, work draft 31-LS0485/Sierra from committee with the new fiscal note number 2 and individual recommendations.
Should I object?
Yeah, go ahead and object and speak to your objection.
I object. I will not be supporting this at this time.
Okay. You want to maintain your objection?
Yes.
Make it to a vote?
Correct.
All right.
May I speak, Mr.
You may speak. Yes.
I'm a little uncomfortable moving this so quickly. One of the things I would like to know is the information back about if there was any provision in the fiscal note for HB 49. Is there some reason why we're needing to move this out today?
No, but it will go back to the Rules Committee, and you have plenty of time to discern that. I don't know that it was going to change how the provisions of this bill stack up at this point. So they've put in a fiscal note based on what they see as the real need. And so, it would be a worthwhile something to check out before we got on the floor, that is for sure. That'd be my approach to it. Senator Keel?
Mr. Chairman, great minds think alike, and apparently so do Senator Hughes and mine.
Oh, great minds.
So I took a look at the fiscal notes from House Bill 49 last year, and none of the judicial branch fiscal notes added anything to the appellate courts, exclusively trial courts.
Can you restate that again?
None of the fiscal notes that the judicial branch submitted to House Bill 49 added any resources to the appellate courts. They were all aimed at the trial courts.
And that fiscal note is numbered what?
So the final one was fiscal note 38.
Okay.
On House Bill 49. But again, it's entirely in the trial court.
Thank you. And I don't know if you'd permit this, but I am wondering if the sponsor might be able to come back up to the table. I'd like to know what we've heard, unless somebody from the administration is online, what they're thinking about the bill. Maybe I missed that, but.
Sure. We can take a brief at ease while we have this conversation. Back to order after some consultation with the committee members, and now we have Nancy Mead back before us. Are you to bring a clarification?
To the chair, Nancy Mead, for the record, general counsel for the court system, and I do want to clarify something I said. I think I misspoke or misremembered. Prosecutors can appeal a sentence that's imposed after a trial, and the Court of Appeals can disprove the sentence as being too lenient. So I think I implied at least that 100% of the cases appealed are by the defense, but that is not the case. I'm sorry for that.
Thank you. Senator Reinbold?
And so can I clarify through the chair that you said the vast majority of them are public defenders? Does that, you know, defendants, the vast majority of them at the Court of Appeals, is that still a true statement? I've got two questions. Is that true?
Through the chair to Senator Reinbold, I don't know the exact numbers, but the majority is certainly by defendants.
Okay, so through the chair, if you could get us, you know, if it's the vast majority, because my understanding is it's pretty much all. And the second question, did you also say that the vast majority are plea bargained out so they don't go to Court of Appeals? So I personally am struggling with the need of this anyway. So on multiple levels of in a time of fiscal crisis, adding four and then to, you know, basically one more vehicle for the public defense, I can't do this right now. Not at the state of some of the highest crime in the nation and in some places the world, some of the people are high risk. I can't continue to just ignore the victims. You know, I want victim center investments right now.
Through the chair to Senator Reinbold, just one comment on that from the court's point of view. The victim suffers or goes through hardship the longer the case takes at the Court of Appeals. So adding a judge would assist the victim and help the problem that the victim is struggling for such a long time period by making that time period shorter. And that's part of the main impetus for the court's support of this bill.
Through the chair.
I didn't really want you to start debating the courts, but you can have one last comment at this. Okay.
So through the chair, to me, if there's more and it's, you know, there's more people going and it's, you know, they're getting more work done, they're actually empowering the defendants to go and to do this. So I can see this from multiple angles, but this is the angle, you know, and I, like I said, I will be a no on this.
All right. Well, with that, we're going to hold this bill over till Wednesday, and we'll have a discussion with the fiscal note and where that might end up. And it was my intention to try to pass it out today, but we have a couple of questions I think we need to get answered. So with that, we're going to hold the bill over. We'll see you on Wednesday next meeting, the 26th. With that, we're adjourned.